I like the watch.
Makes you hot, doesn't it? Yeah. Makes me hot, too. Real hot. Come over here. I'll show you how hot.
Drunk Food Dinner, episode 47. This week, nobody in this shithole gets us because we don't put out, as we hit the road with Diane Lane and Laura Dern in 1982's Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains. Then we see what happens when house sitting in Hollywood goes horribly awry in Brian De Palma's Hitchcockian thriller Body Double from 1985. And finally, we get caught in the middle as God and Satan duke it out in the 1984 anthology Night Train to Terror.
I can love and cry at the same time.
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, episode 47. This is the podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television looking for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. We're not professional film journalists or critics by any means. We are simply three geeks from Ohio with entirely too much time on our hands. In Ohio, I'm Kevin Moss, and I'm joined by my co-host Mark Fredo in New York and Parker Bowman in California. Every week, we'll each bring a cult favorite to the table, recalling our personal experiences with the film, discussing its merits, and arguing why we did or did not enjoy it. This week, we examine Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains from 1982, Body Double from 1984, and Night Train to Terror from 1985. But first, gentlemen, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good, too.
Good to hear. What you guys been up to this week?
I went and saw Party of Helicopters last week, which was pretty fun.
Sounds like a party.
It was. And then, what else? Oh, I went to, Big Fat Scary Thursdays, which was like a screening, and they did a sort of riff session, made up a drinking game for it, and so they did the, Friday the 13th, the final chapter. And that was a lot of fun. There were chicken wings, but I didn't eat any.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah. But no, it was a lot of fun. We did that and hung out with Kevin Marion and got suckered into moving some of his stuff.
Sounds good. Well, now, yeah. Was it indeed the final chapter?
That's yeah, that was the last Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah. That's what I
thought. Fourth one.
Well, I have some spoiler alerts for you guys, but there are at least two more Jason movies after that.
Damn it.
I don't believe it.
The best two are coming up.
Why would they call it the final chapter, though?
I think they wanted your money.
Well, this is free, so fuck them.
take that, Paramount. You're not getting shit from Mark.
Yeah, I think that was all I did this week. I got a haircut.
Ooh, congratulations. How's it look?
It looks great. People won't shut up about it.
Did you get the logo from the New York Knicks, like, etched into the back of your head?
Yeah, well, my Nike swoosh had finally grown out, so I wanted to switch it up.
Yeah, my week has been pretty boring. I was in the lovely city of Indianapolis for an entire week for work, staying in a hotel room and learning about computer software. So if that doesn't sound like a paradise retreat.
Like shareware?
Yeah, like shareware. That's exactly what
you
it was.
You just got to play Doom and stuff?
Yeah, I wish. That would have been way more exciting than what I was doing. But, yeah, it was funny. When I was taking this class, the instructor was like, yeah, we have classes all over, like in Irvine, California, Amsterdam, France. And I'm like, oh, God, I could have been in these locations taking this class. Instead, I'm in Indiana. How the fuck did this happen? And then, the instructor also told us the story about how a month ago he was teaching this class and a woman came into the class, and she was in there for about an hour when the FBI showed up at the classroom door and arrested her. Apparently she had killed her husband and flown into Indiana to take this class and was arrested within hours of sitting down. But I just thought that was hilarious. Like, how'd this woman think she was going to get away with it? And why was the class important at that point?
She had probably already paid for it.
Right. Wanted to get her money's worth.
Yeah.
She was up for a big promotion at work. Mm-hmm.
She wanted
Maybe
to
she was trying to use her how to get away with murder software and didn't know how, so
right.
She had to take the class.
Yeah, she needed to learn how to get inside of a computer, like in The Matrix, to escape.
yeah, so.
That's crazy. Was it a big to-do, or did they just calmly come in and be like, come on?
I guess that was the extent of it.
Oh.
Yeah. So, that was my week in the Circle City.
See a lot of circles?
Saw a lot of circles.
Cool.
Yeah, went to some record stores and then...
Those are circles?
Yeah, sat in a hotel room for 5 nights and cried myself to sleep.
Are people in Indianapolis, like, real stoked about the show Parks and Recreation being based almost there? I would think they would be.
Yeah, that was the gist I got from most locals.
I would think that they would have, like, big banners with Aziz Ansari all over town.
Right, no, not the case. Although I did find out about Indianapolis and Indiana in general. They love their firearms there. They want to be able to bring guns into football games. That was the big story in Indianapolis. So, yeah, hopefully that happens, because that's what the NFL needs, is more guns.
True.
Well, the Philadelphia fans can pelt other teams with, like, B-cell batteries. I would think that...
Oh, and urine.
Yeah, I would think the guns would be welcomed.
Yeah. The next logical step, I think. How about you, Parker? How was your week?
It was pretty crappy. You know, I just sat around and played video games because I'm kind of sick. Like, it went from being 40 degrees here to, like, 75, and for some reason that made me horribly ill. I don't understand the science behind it. But, yeah, I've just been watching movies, and that's about it.
Well, at least you finally had time to catch up on those video games.
Finally, I know.
A little free time.
Finally, just a little me time to sit back and relax.
All right, well, let's get into some of the listener feedback. Hey, we actually got another voicemail. Can you believe that? 2 weeks in a row?
Great.
Yeah, people are calling in. So if you want to leave us a message, please do give us a call on the Junk Food Dinner hotline at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-JUNK. But, yeah, if also we're trying to get some voicemails together for our one-year anniversary show that's coming up here in a couple weeks. So if you would like to talk about the year that was in Junk Food Dinner, some of your favorite reviews, or if there's a movie you found out about the show that you enjoyed, or if there were moments that you didn't like and you thought were crappy, give us a call on the hotline and let us know what you thought of the first year Junk Food Dinner and how you're enjoying the show, and we'll include those on our big one-year anniversary. So without any further ado, this is a voicemail we got from a gentleman named Kessa from Houston, and this is what he had to say.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Dude, just wanted to drop by and say I enjoy the hell out of that podcast, man. It is a very fun and enjoyable show. That's the first thing I listen to in the morning when I turn on my computer. You know, I jump on that podcast, and I look for it to download. If there's a new show, I listen to it right away. Man, especially the films y'all be talking about, man, it's like I grew up watching those films, man. And, you know, whenever I tune in, you know, it's like it takes me back to a place, you know, the mom-and-pop video shops. It was an amazing place that place was, man. The nostalgia, you know, the video cassette, the, you know, the clamshell box art case and shit. It's crazy, man. The first thing I would notice whenever I walked, step foot inside of a mom-and-pop video shop is that aroma, that smell. And it smells like, you know, it's a mix of old molasses, burnt cigarettes, and buffalo chiz. You know, it's all mixed in. You all get that smell, and it's crazy, man. It's I miss those days so much, man. It's so awesome. And for some reason, you never see a chick at a mom-and-pop shop, you know, browsing the videos by herself. I've never seen that. It's always dudes, you know, like dope dudes, you know, and like heroin addicts, you know. And just a couple of recommendations for you guys. You know, I'm a big fan of the Asian cinema, and especially the Korean cinema. There's a couple of movies I like to recommend. Guessing you guys have already seen it. The Man from Nowhere and Bittersweet Life. Both of those films are hard-boiled action movies. It's enjoyable, bloody, it's a revenge tale, and if you're looking to get into Korean cinema, those two movies, I recommend those highly. And for anybody who grew up
and are a fan of cult films or just enjoy film in general, you can do no wrong with Junk Food Dinner, man, because that's the show that I listen to, and I listen to it everywhere I go. Peace out, fellas.
All right, so, yeah, thanks for the message, Kessa. That's awesome. We really appreciate you listening. And, yeah, I will definitely check out those movies. The Bittersweet Life, that was directed by Ji-Won Kim, who also directed The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, which is a really awesome movie. I don't know if you've seen that, but definitely check that out as well.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to see I Saw the Devil on Friday.
Oh, nice.
Thanks to a professional courtesy tip from Mr. Mike Dick.
Nice.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. And, yeah, The Man from Nowhere, that's from last year. That looks really sweet, too. So, yeah, we'll definitely have to check those out. And, yeah, you're right. I never did see any ladies in the mom-and-pop video stores. It was just mostly creepy nerds like myself. So I miss those days as well.
There's actually a mom-and-pop video store here in town, which I can't believe I haven't mentioned yet since I've been living here for a long time. But it's in the back of, like, a birthday party store. You walk yeah. into, yeah, it's great. It's downtown, these like one block area that is downtown here. And you go through this birthday party store, and then in the back is like a bunch of cool like old movies and stuff. And it's really funny because they have their horror movies out front, so all the little kids looking at birthday party stuff get an eye full of Evil Dead and Phantasm.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, that rule.
It's a fun store.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks again, Kessa, for sending us the message. And yeah, if you want to give us a call, give us a ring on 347-746-5865. All right, we got another piece of feedback, this time on the IMDb message boards, from a guy named Captain Claudius. He was referring back to episode 25 when we covered the Phantom Paradise, which was Phantom of the Paradise, which was directed by Brian De Palma, who coincidentally directed another movie that we're going to be talking about tonight called Body Double. So good timing on the response. He was not so thrilled with our review or our show either. He said, I listened to your podcast and here are a few thoughts. He said, one, I'm not sure why it took 41 minutes to get to the review, but a lot of commentary was painfully boring. Nerds don't have to swear to make a point. You can just keep it a little cleaner in terms of language. Believe it or not, some people still associate foul language with low character.
That's you, Parker.
Yeah. I feel like he's talking right at me because I cuss most. I also feel that this guy shouldn't have been listening to our podcast because he was probably busy hanging out at like a Sarah Palin rally or something like that, raising money for conservative beliefs in some way.
Well, here's the way I look at it. We talk about, it's called Junk Food Dinner. We talk about these shitty movies. It's like, what are you expecting? It's like, we want you to think that we have low character. I know it's hard to believe, but the guy's talking about Iced and Slivus, maybe not of the highest character. You ever think about that?
So. Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, when we're talking about a movie like Body Double, I don't want to hear about that movie from Little Lord Fauntleroy or anybody like this.
Right. Another thing he had a problem with, he said Winslow in Phantom of the Paradise is more than a piano player. In quotes, he is a musician. Here is the dictionary definition of musician. He gives us this full to do about what's the difference between a musician and a piano player. Blah blah blah. Come on, that's nitpicking. I mean. Come on.
Yeah, I think that's the definition of trolling, is when you just...
Yeah, that is troll behavior, my friend. Go back under your bridge.
And it's a silly argument, because I'm fairly sure, and my math might be a little off maybe, but all piano players are musicians, because the only thing you can do with a piano is make music. It's right. Sort of like saying, LeBron James is the best basketball player, but he's not an athlete. No, sir.
Right, yeah. But, yeah, obviously...
Now we're going to get hate mail for talking about LeBron James, so probably from my roommate, so thank you.
But, yeah,
I said he was the best basketball player.
She hates him, though.
Oh, well, he's really... he's the second
from the Cleve.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's get back to this troll.
Yeah, he just goes on to say that the film is not a rock, it's a rock opera, not a cult musical, as we refer to it. Just a lot of nipping. I mean,
like and then he defines rock opera for us. As
right,
well.
Yeah, he gives us the Wikipedia definition of rock opera. So thank you for all that great information.
Derp and derp.
Yeah, it's obvious this guy just has a hard-on for Phantom of the Paradise, and he was upset that we didn't give it, you know, a glowing review. Although, I think we all, I enjoyed it. I
liked it, yeah. I don't think anybody was hating on it that much.
Yeah, and I recently picked up the soundtrack on vinyl sealed, which I was excited about. And, yeah, it had a lot of great piano playing on it.
But that's not music, so yeah. I don't know. Why would they even put that on a soundtrack?
A lot of good piano playing, but very little music on that record.
Right. And the last piece of listener feedback that I wanted to get to is from our good pal Joey T on Facebook. He says, I listen to about 5 popular hip-hop podcasts, yet the only one celebrating Black History Month are my favorite 3 geeks from Ohio. So I appreciate that. You know, we always like to be on the cultural forefront.
Yeah.
So.
Are we heroes?
I'd like to think so, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was the listener feedback. If you'd like to get in contact with us, please feel free to send us a message on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. All right, with that being said, let's get into nerd news.
From the global resources of Junk Food Dinner Worldwide, it's time for Nerd News.
All right, the first piece of nerd news that we have this week, a sad piece of nerd news. I know, again,
always
we don't do this on purpose, but yeah, David Friedman, the classic exploitation producer, responsible for giving the world things as Herschel Gordon Lewis's Blood Feast, as well as Ilsa the She-Wolf of the SS, which we've talked about on the show, passed away at the age of 87 on Valentine's Day, February 14th. So, yeah, that was sad to hear. He was, you know, a legendary producer of a lot of very Z-grade horror and exploitation stuff, a lot of stuff for Herschel Gordon Lewis and things like of that nature. So, you know, obviously not somebody that's probably going to be recognized at the Oscars this year or anything, but for cult movie fans, sad to hear of his passing.
Certainly.
Indeed so.
But yeah, he produced 2000 Maniacs, Color Me Blood Red, as well as some more recent stuff from Herschel Gordon Lewis as well. So, yeah, sad to see him go.
Why did you laugh about that?
Yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
Now who's the troll?
I wasn't laughing at his death. I was reading ahead in the news, and I got a little carried away.
Oh.
So anyway, David Friedman, I don't mean to laugh at your passing, but I will laugh at Blood Feast next time I watch it because that is hilariously awesome. The next piece of nerd news that I have is it looks like HBO is on a fast track to get rid of the Skinemax branding that goes along with their co-company Cinemax. It looks like HBO is trying to take Cinemax in a new direction with some gritty action series. One called Strike Back, and one based on the Transporter movies. They're trying to rebrand the pay cable station, not of one of softcore pornography, but more hard-hitting action. So it'll be sad, you know, our kids will not get to experience the glory of staying up till 2 a.m. to watch softcore pornography on Cinemax.
Yeah, I know. If only there was some way for them to easily find all the hardcore pornography that they could ever want.
Yeah, but I'd say that, you know, takes a step out of the pornography ladder. You know, you go from softcore to the hardcore. If you're jumping right into hardcore, 13, you know, what do you have to look forward to?
Well, I think now they have...
What reason do you have to get out of bed in the morning?
Well, that's true. But luckily now they have the hardcore porn and then ultra-mega-hardcore porn.
Yeah, that's true.
So they can make that step. But what we used to consider hardcore porn is now basically the equivalent of a Victoria's Secret magazine.
Yeah. And, you know, you won't be able to make Skinemax jokes to your kids. They'll just look at you like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, that's true. That's going to cut out a lot of conversations between me and my kids.
I know. I had all these Skinemax conversations planned for my future children. And now they're ruined.
Yeah, I don't know how I'm going to be able to describe the birds and the bees. Or what I'm going to say at their weddings.
Right. All ruined.
Yeah. I am excited for a Transporter TV show. I think that would be cool. I really, really like Jason Statham. So,
yeah,
I mean, he probably won't be.
He won't be in this.
Yeah, he probably won't be.
Get a Max show.
Yeah, but still, anything remotely connected to him is awesome to me.
Yeah.
in a room.
I really love him, and I just want him to listen to this show and give me a call. And maybe we'll hang out.
Yeah, keep dreaming.
And, and jump kick doors into people's chests.
It might happen one day, you never know.
I'm hoping so.
The next piece of nerd news we have is that Michael Paul Stevenson, who was the director and he was the director of the recent documentary Best Worst Movie, as well as being the child star that starred in Troll 2, the subject of Best Worst Movie, is now, with some help from his friends from Alamo Drafthouse, in the business of making original movies. He is going to make a film called Destroy. It's going to be a fast-paced, would-be vampire hunter movie. And it looks like it's going to be a blood-splattered comedy. So if you enjoyed Best Worst Movie, and did you guys get a chance to see that yet?
I still haven't seen that.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, it was all right. I don't know. It most being that it was made by people who were in the movie, it mostly just seemed like, hey, look at us. Look how cool we are. But it was still pretty good.
Yeah, no, I get that. It was kind of self-serving, but it was good. I thought it was, you know, pretty well directed. So I have faith that Michael Paul Stevenson will be able to direct a fictional movie just as well. So I look forward to seeing that. And obviously, if he, you know, with all his ties to the horror community, with his recent cult successes, you know, the director of Best Worst Movie, I'm sure he has his finger on the pulse of the horror community. So it should be pretty interesting to see how that turns out.
Indeed so.
The next piece of nerd news is it looks like Matthew Vaughn, who directed Kick-Ass, and the upcoming X-Men First Class, is going to be directing another superhero movie. Apparently, he just cannot get away from the genre. But the next movie he's going to be making is going to be about elderly superheroes. And some of the potential stars include Clint Eastwood, Warren Beatty, and Jack Nicholson. So he had kids superheroes in Kick-Ass, teenage superheroes in the new X-Men, so now he's going full Monty. And going straight for the elderly crowd. So, I don't know. We'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Didn't they just do that with that Red movie? Isn't that basically what that was?
Yeah, I think that was more like Secret Agents and Spies. I actually have that sitting on my table right now from Netflix. So I'll let you know how it turns out.
Let me know how many superheroes are in that.
I'm going to guess zero. The next piece of nerd is... Actually, the final piece of nerd news that I have is it looks like H.R. Puffin Stuff is headed to DVD just in time for its 40th anniversary. So if you're a fan of psychedelic drug-inspired children's shows, which I certainly am, you'll definitely want to pick up H.R.
Oh, you mean
Stuff.
All children's shows.
Right. You'll definitely want to pick up H.R. Puffin Stuff, the complete series, on April 12th. They're also going to be releasing a lot more of the Sid and Marty Krofft world on DVD, including Lidsville, which is going to be getting remade as a movie coming up soon from DreamWorks, which we can look forward to. Hopefully, one of my favorites, Electra Woman and Dinah Girl, will be finally coming out on DVD. But, you know, we'll see.
I think the main character in Lidsville's name is Mark, so I guess I should probably get interested in that.
Yeah, get ready for that DreamWorks movie coming out.
Yes, finally.
Talking Hats. Soon to a screen near you. All right, well, let's get into some of the cool stuff on DVD this week. First DVD we have this week is Birdemic, Shock and Terror. Yes,
Woo! Finally
available on DVD and Blu-ray. So if you want to see those amazing special effects on Blu-ray, pick that up this week. Now, we talked about this. Oh, God, ages ago.
Yeah, many moons.
Yeah, back on one of the earlier episodes of Junk Food Dinner. So if you want our full review of that movie, go dig back in the archives and find that one. But, yeah, this is one of the best.
Greatest.
Movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of best, worst movie, this is one that can definitely rank up there. Super low budget. I think it was made for like $10,000.
Yeah, or seven. Whatever. Right over 5 years and...
Right, and if you like pixelated birds hovering in midair, you definitely, you definitely have to pick this one up. So I'm glad that one is finally available on video, because I've been telling so many people about it, and now people can finally, if you didn't have the chance to see it in the theater, now you can own it on home video.
And I will.
Tell your friends.
tell your kids, because you can't tell them about Skin America.
Right. Next DVD we have is Alien vs. Ninja. The filmmakers behind Tokyo Gore Police and The Machine Girl joined studio Sushi Typhoon to add this side-splitting horror comedy to their line of entertaining cult cinema. In ancient Japan, the fiercest ninjas of the Iga clan and their toughest enemies, their toughest enemies are not from this planet. Have you guys seen Tokyo Gore Police or The Machine Girl? I think we've talked about this on previous episodes, but I really like those. I mean, they're fucking wacky, super violent Japanese.
Yeah, they're absurd.
But definitely fun to watch. I think both of them are on Netflix Watch Instantly, so if you like super gory, stylized Japanese mayhem, check those out. And Alien vs. Ninja is going to the top of my Netflix queue. Next DVD we have is The Killing Jar from 2010, starring Michael Madsen and Danny Trejo, directed by Mark Young. Working the late shift at a remote diner turns into an unrelenting nightmare for waitress Noreen, played by Buffy the Vampire Slayer's Amber Benson. When she and six customers learn of a nearby murder spree that is connected to a mysterious stranger, Michael Madsen, who just walked in the door, a hostage situation quickly erupts, resulting in shocking outbursts of violence and even more startling revelations that they could have never anticipated. This is, you know, a hostage action movie. Like I said, Danny Trejo, Michael Madsen, and Amber Benson. So I haven't heard too much about this. I don't think this was... got a lot of play in the theaters, if at all. It might be a straight-to-DVD thing, but nevertheless, looks pretty cool. So I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about it, but if Amber Benson is there, then count me in. I will rent it twice.
Yeah, who was she in Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
She was Tara, who was Willow's girlfriend.
Gotcha.
I don't know. I could go on and on.
But... I'm sure you could.
But there's your short answer.
Gotcha. Next DVD we have is Due Date from last year, starring Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis, directed by Todd Phillips, who directed The Hangover. Due Date throws two unlikely companions together for a road trip that turns out to be life-changing, and as it is, outrageous. It sounds basically just like Trains, Planes, and Automobiles for the 21st century. And, I don't know. I like Todd Phillips all right. I thought The Hangover was pretty funny. I like Road Trip and that G.G. Allen documentary.
I thought this looked horrendous.
Yeah, I don't know. I was going to give it the benefit of the doubt, but yeah, you're right. I'm not holding out a whole lot of hope.
I think it's awful.
Did you like The Hangover?
I liked it the first time I saw it, and then the second time I saw it, I did not like it.
Yeah. I don't know.
This is the movie where Zach Galifianakis plays a dumb guy who might be retarded. Is that right? The one movie where he plays that role?
Yeah.
He has a perm, I think.
Yeah, this looked pretty awful. I didn't like the Hangover, and I'm certainly not going to like The Hangover minus Ed Helms, so I won't watch this.
Yeah, fair enough. Next DVD we have is Sweet Smell of Success, Criterion Collection from 1957. The swift, cynical Sweet Smell of Success, directed by Alexander Mackendrick, who directed The Ladykillers, stars Burt Lancaster as a barbaric Broadway gossip columnist, and Tony Curtis from Some Like It Hot as Sidney Falco, the unprincipled press agent who ropes into smearing the up-and-coming jazz musician romancing his beloved sister. These Criterion collections that they've been releasing recently have been really good. And, this is from 1957, Burt Lancaster, Tony Curtis. If you're into that sort of thing, check it out. If not, you know, go watch Due Date.
Did you guys see that Criterion is putting all their stuff on Hulu's, like the Hulu Plus that you pay for and watch jazz on?
No, that's pretty cool, though. It would be sweeter if it was just on Hulu non-plus, but
yeah.
How much are they charging for that Hulu?
Oh, I don't know. It's probably comparable to whatever Netflix charges for just the instant watch.
Yeah, $7 a month or something like that.
Yeah, but still, all that Criterion stuff, that's good stuff.
That might be worth it right there.
Yeah.
Next DVD I have is the DVD and Blu-ray combo. It's Embodiment of Evil. After serving a 40-year prison term, Coffin Joe is finally released from the mental health wing of Sao Paulo Penitentiary. Back on the streets, the sadistic undertaker is set upon fulfilling the goal, which which sent him to jail in the first place. Find a woman who can give him the perfect child. Accompanied by his faithful servant, the humpback Bruno, Coffin Joe leaves behind a trail of horror that is haunted by ghostly visions and spirits of past victims. So this is the latest installment of the Coffin Joe series. Have you guys seen any of those movies? They go all the way back to the 60s. He's this dude who, since like the early 60s, he did a movie called At Midnight I Take Your Soul and This Night I Possess Your Corpse. And he's kind of a cult hero. And, back in 2008, he did the latest installment of the Coffin Joe series, and this is it, available in this DVD Blu-ray combo pack. So have you guys seen any of those movies, the Coffin Joe flicks?
I saw the second one, but that's the only one that I've seen. I can't believe that they're still making these.
Yeah.
Kind of awesome.
Yeah, definitely. So check that out. And the last Blu-ray I have is 48 Hours, comes out on Blu-ray from 1982, starring Dick Dolphy, Eddie Murphy. This is probably my favorite of the buddy cop movies. I mean, there's an endless supply of them from the 80s, and this really kind of kicked off the genre, this and Lethal Weapon, of course. But I don't know. I think this one is probably my favorite. Eddie Murphy is just hilarious in it, and Nick Nolte, you know, it's just a total badass. It's the grizzled cop. So if you haven't seen 48 Hours, and you have a Blu-ray player, now might be the time to pick it up.
Especially if you're only 2 days from retirement.
All right, well, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to jump into our first movie of the evening, Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains from 1982, so stick around.
Did you know that there are two ways to help out Junk Food Dinner? The first way involves sacrificing a goat or a human baby on an altar made of dragon bones. Or, next time you're on iTunes, you can leave us a 5-star review. You can write the comment that says everyone should listen to Junk Food Dinner. You can add as many exclamation points as you want. This will help more people find the show on iTunes. Recording each episode of Junk Food Dinner is the most physically and emotionally taxing activity known to man. It leaves us exhausted and bloody after the show. The least you can do is give us a good review.
Degree burn. I'm the lead singer and manager for the Stains.
And it has become clear to several thousand very young women, inspired by an unrecorded rock and roll band with see-through blouses and white stripes in their hair, that life is to be lived right now.
You are gonna be really good. Can't explain it.
What it really amounts to is girl dropouts who are using the media.
She said things that I've always wanted to say, and I haven't been able to.
We're the Stains, and we don't put out.
We weren't like that, were we, Brenda?
No, we weren't.
You are moving so fast. You're happening so fast. You can't afford to be loyal to this guy.
Why are you still hanging around here? Why don't you just go back to wherever it was you came from?
You've got a lot to learn, you little... Yeah, I want to see the world for free.
Ladies and gentlemen, fabulous
Stains! Call up, calling the Stains. The commies are coming, did I hear you say? Who cares, who knows, maybe I will one day.
Rhino Entertainment presents a Lou Adler film. Ladies and gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains. DVD and soundtrack now available.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 47. The first movie we're going to be taking a look at is, ladies and gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains from 1982. This movie stars Diane Lane as Corinne Burns. This is Diane Lane in her early years. I think she was only about 15 years old when this movie was made. She plays Corinne Burns, whose father died in the military, and her mom just recently passed away from cancer. So the young Corinne finds herself on her own. Her and her cousin Tracy Burns, played by Maren Cantor, and their friend Jessica McNeil, played by a young Laura Dern, who was also a relative unknown at this time, form a all-girl rock band. Corinne has recently been featured on the news as a person of interest, as she was fired from her job and she, is just like a local outcast. And she uses her celebrity from the news to get on a tour with a British punk band called The Looters, led by Ray Winstone, playing a guy named Billy. The rest of The Looters are made up of actual real-life musicians, including Paul Simonon from The Clash, and Steve Jones and Paul Cook from the Sex Pistols. They're currently on tour with the band called the Metal Corpses, which are an aging glam rock, classic rock band. Billy and the rest of the Looters are none too happy to be on a tour with these aging rock guys and are looking for new tour mates. So the tour promoter and bus driver is a Rastafarian by the name of Lawn Boy. He recognizes Corinne from her news appearance and offers her band a slot on the tour with the Metal Corpses and the Looters. So, in almost comical fashion, the band quickly starts getting a cult following. After a shaky start, the band, obviously being young 15-year-old girls, are not too adept at playing their instruments. So there's some rocky starts to get past, but eventually they do start making a name for themselves. Also, Corinne forms a relationship with Billy, which eventually turns tumultuous. The story basically, though, is rags-to-riches story about this band, this group of young girls that form this band, and eventually inspire a whole legion of girls to follow their lead. This movie, it was directed by Lou Adler, who prior to this, had directed Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke. This movie was released by Paramount, but before it was released, it had a lot of setbacks. The studio didn't really like it. They weren't quite sure what to do with it. It had a small release in a few art house theaters back in 1982, but never really got the full release that Lou Adler had intended. The movie then went unknown for many decades. It never got a proper home video release on VHS, and it was shown very sporadically on cable television, sometimes on Showtime or on USA's Up All Night or things like that. And but it did gain a cult following, namely among a lot of young musicians. Kathleen Hanna of the Bikini Kill has referenced this movie as one of her inspirations for starting the whole Riot Girl movement. This, along with a movie called Times Square, which we might have to talk about on the show at one point. But this, you know, this movie has, being 1982, it really had its pulse on the punk rock movement at the time. The fact that it has a lot of real musicians in it, as I mentioned, you know, the guys from The Clash and the Sex Pistols. It also features L.A. punk musician Black Brandy and the Metro Squad. You have the lead singer of the Tubes, the lead singer of the Metal Corps. There's a lot of real musicians in it, a lot of cool music. An official soundtrack was never released. A couple years ago, Rhino released this on DVD, and they had promised to release the soundtrack on vinyl and CD, but that never happened. There are bootlegs of the soundtrack floating around online, which you can find, but it does have a pretty cool soundtrack. But yeah, I'm curious. I liked this movie for a couple years, ever since Rhino did inevitably release it. I saw it, and yeah, always enjoyed it. If you're a fan of punk rock music or, you know, kind of music-themed movies, you probably enjoy this. But yeah, I'm interested to find out what you guys thought of Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains.
I saw this movie once a couple years ago when I was working at the video store. It came out on that DVD release, and it seemed like a lot of people were really pumped about it, and I really like Laura Dern, so I rented it. And I thought that it was great, and then recently Aaron got it through Netflix, so I watched it again, and then now we're doing it on the show. So yeah, I like this movie a lot. I think it's a lot of fun. I think there are some genuinely hilarious moments and dialogue in it, and yeah, I think it's cool to see all those cameos and all the people that kind of got behind it to kind of get this movie together. So yeah, I enjoy it, and I'm surprised how many people have not seen this, given how excited the people that were into it when it came out were. So I was kind of expecting more people to get real into this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's awesome.
Well, firstly, I'm surprised that this is our second Diane Lane movie. I don't know if we could have ever fathomed that would happen. But
yeah.
I don't know. I didn't find this movie boring per se, but I didn't find that it had anything interesting about it. I didn't really care about the characters or what was happening to any of them at all. Like, I mean, it just seemed like it was there. Like, I was never bored. I never thought it was a bad movie, but there was nothing about it that will make me remember it in the future. I don't know, like, the characters were just so boring and bland and by the numbers, I thought, and the story was silly. Just instantly, this girl becomes a star because she was on local television a couple of times. Seems silly even by our internet standards, you know, nowadays. But much less when, you know, it took 6 weeks for somebody in another town to hear about something famous.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. And I also thought it was kind of silly and unbelievable that, you know, these guys were on this tour, and then the headliners, the Metal Corpses, had to drop off the tour, and then the supporting acts kept on touring the same schedule. That would never happen.
Right.
You know, if you went to go see, you know, whatever the kids are into these days, the Marilyn Manson, and Marilyn Manson canceled and said, hey, the supporting act, the opening band is still going to play, so you guys should check that out. Everybody would
jack off Jill.
Yeah. Everybody except me would leave because I like Jack Off Jill.
I knew it.
So yeah, I don't know. There's nothing interesting about this. I didn't really care for it.
See, I disagree with you. I think that all the characters had kind of interesting storylines. You know, I thought Diane Lane was really good in this. She is, in any other actress's hands, this might have been, you know, what you were describing. But I think Diane Lane, even at 15, was such a good, compelling actress that I was really drawn in by her story. Then you have, you know, the story of Billy and the British band that are kind of none too thrilled to be touring the United States, let alone with this, like, aging group of rock stars. And then, you know, there's the whole dynamic where, you know, they look at that band as a group of old farts, and then when the Stains start to gain popularity, they kind of replace the, you know, the looters, and so it's kind of like the, you know, secular thing of, you know, just when you think you're the youngest, coolest thing, there's always something younger and cooler to come along. And, you know, then there's the whole story with the metal corpses about, you know, the guy that dies of the overdose and their relationship with one another. And, you know, I thought the, you know, the interplay between all the factions of this movie, and then, you know, you have the side story with Lawn Boy, and he's trying to raise money to get his friend in Jamaica out of jail. So, you know, they all have their own interesting stories, and they all kind of interact well with one another. It kept me compelled throughout the entire movie.
So. I think maybe it was just the energy of the movie, more so than maybe what was going on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, other movies like this have, like, this energy that's all their own. You know, like, Sid and Nancy has an energy about it, and, like, Almost Famous has an energy about it. But I thought the only time where this movie, like, was very energetic was at the end when they were doing the music video. That was really the only part where I was like, oh, yeah, this is fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a general malaise about this movie where it's not, like, real, yeah, like you said, energetic or in your face. It is kind of depressing in some ways, and I think it's kind of supposed – that was an intentional mood that the film was trying to set. I mean, a lot of the atmosphere is real bleak. There's a lot of rainy scenes and stuff, and there's a lot of, you know, just general discontent among the characters. You know, a lot of their lives – are not going the way that they had hoped. And I think that is a definite mood of the film, which I can see where it might get boring, but I was engaged, like I said, with the characters' storylines enough where it was enough for me to stick along for the ride. I mean, not only that, but it had what I thought was a lot of good, you know, relics from that era in terms of music and fashion. And if you're a fan of, you know, punk rock from the early 80s, I'd say definitely check out this movie just for a lot of the, you know, iconic stuff that's involved.
Like, yeah, Steve Jones' jackets.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I might actually like this movie better than Almost Famous.
Really? Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd go that far, but it does have a lot of the same. It has a similar feel to it in some aspects, I think.
I don't mean to say that I disliked this movie. I mean, it's watchable. There's just nothing good about it. You know, as much as there's nothing bad about it, there's nothing good about it, I thought.
Yeah, I can get what you're saying. I did think it was hilarious how quickly she gained an army of devoted fans. I mean, it's so comically how fast they go from total obscurity to overnight sensation, literally. It's like,
yeah,
Justin Bieber.
Yeah, she's the original Justin Bieber. It is interesting to note that Diane Lane, Laura Dern, and Maren Cantor all learned instruments and played for real in this movie. And I guess that's not really hard to believe, because when they first start playing, they really are inept. But, I mean, it's charming in a way to see, you know, the rise from mediocre to pop sensation.
Yeah, near the end, Diane Lane was really good with that tambourine, I thought. She played that pretty well.
Yeah.
And despite being a very good tambourine player, I would not consider her a musician.
Right. It's also interesting in this movie to see a young Ray Winstone before he packed on like 70 pounds and was in such movies as The Departed and Sexy Beast. But yeah, he became quite the serious actor after his portrayal of the punk rockin' Billy in this movie. I thought he was really good in this movie. I thought his performance was really good. Like I said, Diane Lane I thought was great in this movie. I think for as young as they were and how inexperienced they were as actors, I think they both really turn out good performances, which I think is another reason to check this movie out. Is I think both their performances are top-notch, especially for actors of their age and experience at the time. Yeah. Anything else you guys want to touch on?
I want to touch on Laura Dern. You know what I'm saying?
Oh!
That's creepy, dude. She's 15 in this movie.
I didn't mean in the movie. I guess sure you did. Although I guess I don't mean now either, so.
Yeah, maybe like at a Streets of Fire age.
Yeah, let me in the middle. All
right. Yeah, it is kind of creepy to talk about Diane Lane in this movie, because she is, I mean, a good-looking girl, and it's fairly sexually charged performance, but yeah, then you're like, she's 15. I probably shouldn't think or talk about that.
Well, they were trying to get you to on account of having her boobs all up in that shower scene.
Yeah, that was a little odd. I don't think that would fly these days to have a 15-year-old shower sex scene. But
probably not. Unless you're on MTV's The Skins, then it would fly.
Right. But yeah. So in conclusion, you know, I to get away from the whole pedophile aspect of this conversation.
We can cut that out later.
But yeah, I think this movie, if you're a fan of late 70s, early 80s punk rock, this is definitely one of musical note, and I think there's strong performances. I think it was well written. And I'd say this is definitely kind of like a forgotten classic that you might want to check out. All right, so we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about Body Double from 1984.
Tired of only hearing your junk food dinner hosts talk to you? You want to start talking to them? Then pick up your Zach Morris-like cellular phone and dial 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Leave us a message about the movies we've talked about. Did we give a good review to a movie you think sucks? Did we take a crap on your favorite movie? Let us know. Or call it to suggest a movie, or tell us why you hate LeBron James. Remember to leave a name and the city you represent when you call. We are very lonely, and rarely hear the voices of other humans.
So dial this number now if you dare. Tell them that he sent you.
He was trespassing, but he was invited. He knew he had gone too far. He couldn't stop. He saw exactly what she wanted him to see. Master of Suspense invites you to witness a seduction, a mystery, a murder. Body Double. You can't believe everything you see.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. The next movie we have up is Body Double from 1984. This is a movie I've never seen before. I've never even seen the trailer before picking it for the show. But I've always known that this movie was Patrick Bateman's in American Psycho's favorite movie. He talks about it all throughout the book and stuff. And I always just assumed it was a fake movie because he always talks about liking the Patty Winters show and other things that don't exist. So when I was at my local mom-and-pop video store a few weeks ago, I saw this and flipped out. not having any idea that it was real. So I immediately had to pick it on the show, went right into it not knowing anything about it other than the fact that somebody gets killed with a drill, because that's all Patrick Bateman says about it. I also decided to do it now because in a few weeks we'll be doing a show featuring Patrick Bateman, which I'm very excited about. But yeah, so as far as this movie goes, we've got a fellow named Jake Scully, who is a down-on-his-luck actor, played by Craig Wasson, who you probably remember as the guy who helped kill Freddy in Part 3 of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Indeed.
And probably nothing else. he's trying to do this movie, a B-movie, it seems, where he plays sort of a punk rock vampire that looks exactly like 80s Spike from the Buffy show, which I thought was funny. They're trying to shoot this coffin scene, and it seems that he has this horrible claustrophobia, which results in him getting fired. He gets fired around the same time that he comes home to find his girlfriend doing a little cheating in a scene that looked exactly like the opening scene from Truth or Dare that we talked about a long time ago. So I was very excited about that. It pretty much could have been the same scene. I think they just digitally put Craig Wasson into this. So, you know, he's totally down on his luck. He meets this fellow, Sam Bouchard, played by Greg Henry, who tells him that he can stay at his place. He's going out of town for a while to Seattle to shoot a movie, and he needs somebody to watch the place while he's gone. The only catch is you have to check out the chick who lives across the way through a telescope because she is naked and horny all the time. That's the downfall of watching this guy's place for 5 weeks, apparently. So Jake gets all obsessed with watching this girl because she's foxy. He starts following her around at a mall, realizes that there's also somebody else following her around. These two guys follow this chick around for about an hour and a half, and at some point, the second guy steals the broad's purse. Jake chases him down, gets it back, and you think everything's going to be all good. Apparently, maybe this guy just wanted to follow this girl around for an hour and a half just to steal the purse. But a little bit later, when Jake goes back to watching the girl because he's a pervert, he sneaks into the house and kills her. The guy who does the killing, by the way, I believe is played by Chief Woodenhead from Creepshow. And
I think you mean Creepshow 2.
Oh, was that Creepshow 2?
Yeah. But you are correct.
Same actor, though.
Yeah, definitely.
So from there, any other movie might end there, perhaps. But other things happen. Craig gets involved with pornography and drinking and record playing and goes to Tower Records to buy some porn VHS tapes. And and decides that since this girl that he really liked died, he's going to become a porn star. And that's what he does with his life. And then things just kind of get crazy from there and hectic from there. I really enjoyed this movie. It was fun to finally see it, since for 10 years I've been like, man, I wish this movie that Patrick Bateman loved really existed so that I could see it. And it apparently does exist. And so I'm excited for that. And I thought it was a good movie. It sort of reminded me, for no real reason that I can pinpoint, it reminded me of Boxing Helena, which is a movie we talked about a long time ago.
Well, well, well.
I liked it. I thought it was really cool. Craig Wasson, I thought, was really good in it. Melanie Griffith was good in it, who plays porn star Holly Body, who Jake meets up with and does a bunch of porn movies with. There are some cool twists and turns and a lot of fun stuff in it, I thought. How do you guys feel about it?
I had heard of this movie before, only by virtue of the fact that it was infamous for the movie in which Melanie Griffith showed her tits, and that was all I knew about it for years as a kid. That was my only reference to this movie is, hey, go watch Body Double if you want to see Melanie Griffith naked. And for some reason, Melanie Griffith was like the shit back when I was a kid. I remember everybody like having a really big crush on her, which is weird because she didn't like star in a lot of movies that 12-year-olds would see, I don't think. I mean, I don't remember what I specifically saw her in as a kid, but I definitely thought she was a sex symbol for sure. Maybe watching Cherry 2000 a lot. Who knows? Anyway.
Well, she was in that movie Milk Money. which was
that's true.
And she was a hooker in that movie. And hookers.
That's probably it. Yeah, and it was filmed in Cincinnati, so.
Ah, I didn't know.
Yeah, so. All right. Well, there you go. Melanie Griffith. But so anyway.
I got to the bottom of that.
Yeah. So anyway, when I was watching this movie, though, Melanie Griffith doesn't show up in this movie until about an hour and 10 minutes into the movie. So I'm watching this, and all that's in my head is, all right, you're going to get to see Melanie Griffith naked. And the fact that I'm not seeing Melanie Griffith for the first hour and 10 minutes, I'm like, am I watching the right movie? You know, I was very confused. But when she does come in, it's awesome to see Melanie Griffith as an 80s porn star. That there alone is well worth the price of admission. But, I agree. I think this movie was a lot of fun. I love the movies within the movie. We've got the vampire kiss movie that Jake Scully is working on at the beginning of the film, which I thought was awesome. Directed by Dennis Franz, who he claims was doing his best Brian De Palma impression for his role as the angry director of Vampire Kiss. This movie directed by Brian De Palma, who, as we mentioned before, directed Phantom of the Paradise. He's also directed things like Scarface and Carrie and Mission Impossible and The Untouchables and Carlita's Way. So he's definitely done a lot of work. This is probably one that is not as known in the Brian De Palma filmography. But I think this was, a really good suspense movie. This is obviously heavily influenced by Alfred Hitchcock. I mean, there's direct homages to things like Rear Window and Vertigo. Jake Scully is real claustrophobic, which kind of plays into this whole story, much like the Vertigo plays into the Vertigo story. This is definitely a very Hitchcock-inspired movie, but I thought it was a lot of fun. I loved, a lot of the stylistic choices. There's a lot of really cool points in the movie where Jake is following this Gloria girl, and he has a lot of interesting vantage points depending on where he is. Like, they film this in like a mall, like an outdoor mall on Rodeo Drive, and he has interesting vantage points of these people following him. There's scenes in hotels and stuff where he'll be like on a higher level architecturally than everyone else, and he can see different things that this Gloria woman can't see. And so I thought that was really cool. There's a lot of really great cinematography that you'd expect from a Brian De Palma movie. And it's 2 hours long, but I never felt like this was slow or boring. I can understand how you could connect this to things like Boxing Helena, because it is kind of like an erotic thriller of sorts. But I thought it was definitely one of the better produced erotic thrillers that I've seen. And it was just a lot more fun, and the characters were a lot more interesting. So I had a really good time watching this. I was really surprised at how intrigued I was throughout the movie, and just genuinely thought it was fun. So I would definitely recommend this.
I think I'm in a different camp. While I definitely, I like Brian De Palma, and I like Phantom of the Paradise, if you can believe it, a lot of his other stuff. But this did nothing for me. I thought I liked the story, and I like movies within movies and stuff. And like you said, I like the cool, very Brian De Palma stylistic stuff, looking through the telescope and the different vantage points and all that stuff. Like, I like all of that, but I thought this movie was painfully boring. Nothing happens. And for huge chunks of time, I found myself just wondering why this was, like, oh, he's just driving around. Cool. Now he's just looking at stuff. Now he's sad because he's an actor. And so I thought this movie could have been about certainly a half an hour shorter, maybe even more. And then I probably would have liked it. Because, like I said, there were things about it that I liked. But mostly I was just sighing aggressively in my room. I don't know. And I like a lot of the actors in it, too. I like the husband.
Greg Henry?
Yeah, I like Greg Henry a lot. And I was excited that he was in it. I just could not get into it. And it also reminded me of Boxing Helena. in that I couldn't get into it, and I thought that it was super boring. but I wanted to like it, because I was, before I watched, I waited until today to watch it, just because of scheduling stuff. But I was like, oh, it's Brian De Palma in the movie, and it's going to be awesome, and da-da-da-da-da-da. And then so I was, like, jazzed up about it, and then I was sad.
Yeah, I think a couple things that I really liked about this movie is, first and foremost, the house that Jake Scully is house-sitting is a real place called the Chemosphere in Los Angeles, California. It's like the spaceship-looking house, and that place was totally badass.
That is amazing.
I think more movies should utilize that location, because apparently it's real, and it still exists, so, yeah, it is one of the craziest, architecturally just ridiculous things I've ever seen in a movie. Secondly, the scene where, the whole second half of the movie is almost kind of a different movie than the first half. Like, the first half is kind of like this Rear Window homage where the guy's watching this girl, and then the second half is when he does, like, this complete 180 and turns into, like, this porn star guy, and he hooks up with Melanie Griffith, who's a porn star, and the scene where, because he actually goes and auditions and gets into this porn movie, the scene within the porn movie where it's all those guys singing Frankie Goes to Hollywood, and, it is truly bizarre and ridiculous, and it sounds terrible, but I don't know. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that part with Frankie Goes to Hollywood was him inside the movie, the porn movie that they were shooting at first. I was like, wow, once you become a porn star, like, you go to some crazy parties. This is nuts.
Right. Yeah. I don't think any porn movie, though, could afford the rights to Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
True.
But yeah, I mean, this movie is just overflowing with 80s craziness, and I just can't understand how you could not fully embrace that.
I just couldn't do it. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
One thing I kind of didn't get about this movie, which is possibly what reminded me of Boxing Helena, is that at the end, there are like these weird hallucinations, and you're kind of left not knowing what really happens, which was kind of confusing. I mean, like, normally, in any, like, 95% of the movies we do on this show, if something didn't make sense at the end, I was just like, that was a weird fucking movie. I don't know. Who cares? But with this movie, like, I was like, well, what happened? Like, what,
why did that happen?
Yeah. I don't know why that happened. And I don't know why he got his job acting back at the end. Apparently, if you stop murderers, you get your jobs back.
Wait, are you talking about the part where he hallucinates that he was back on the set with Dennis Franz?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how he overcame his claustrophobia when he was being buried in that grave to escape. Like, he had that flashback to, the first time that the claustrophobia hit when he was on set, and then he mentally got through it in his head, which led to him being able to physically get through it and defeat Sam Bouchard at the end of the movie.
So why was he back in the movie?
Yeah, and then
it was in his mind.
But then, there's that part.
So he died.
There's that part.
Like,
but
a
then
Jacob Blatter in.
Well, there's that part. But then he also leaves Holly in the ditch because she's being a bitch. And then 2 seconds later, he's back being 80s Spike, and Holly is there with him, and he's making the movie with Dennis Franz again.
Yeah.
But, I mean, is that part all a hallucination, or did he get his job back?
He did get his job back.
Well, that's dumb.
Yeah, I couldn't understand why he got his job back.
It's a dumb movie.
I mean, they already
wanted a happy ending. Yeah.
But yeah, that's the only part I was weirded out about. I did not like it, though, because most of that last scene is just naked boobs in a shower. So, I mean, even if it didn't
make
sense.
Can't really be too mad at it, yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. And he looked like 80s Spike, like I said, so if 80s Spike wants to touch some boobs, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I say go see this movie. Not just go to see it for the Melanie Griffith nudity, stay for the Brian De Palma weirdness.
And then watch it again after we talk about American Psycho in a couple of weeks. So, past, present, and future watching of this movie.
Man, you guys, and you know what? If you're out there, you can have all of my watches, too. We're giving those away on this show.
That's like 6 free watches of this movie, people.
Yeah, we're passing the savings on to you.
So unless you guys have anything else, that's Body Double.
That is Body Double.
Well, that is Body Double. We'll be back in a moment, and Mark will tell us all about The Night Train to Terror.
Honor! join us as a rock and roll band gives its final performance.
What can I do for you, Mr. Satan?
For our ill-fated travelers chosen to endure a terrifying journey into the darkest regions of the human soul as the forces of good and evil engage in the final conflict.
I'll open the gates of hell!
There is only one master, and his name is Satan!
At stake, the fate of all humans.
Have you come to challenge me?
Your guide is a powerful, relentless, unspeakable force. A power born in the darkest corner of hell. You may try to run. You may try to scream. Either way, you've bought a one-way ticket to the outer reaches of horror. Join John Philip Law and Cameron Mitchell on this deadly excursion beyond the reaches of sanity. Night Train to Terror. Climb aboard. Your destination is hell.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 47. The last movie tonight is 1985's Night Train to Terror. This is a movie that I had never seen or heard of before doing it for the show. A faithful listener and friend, Nicole Eggert, suggested that we do it. And so I picked it. The film is about a train that God and Satan are playing chess and divvying up souls on, which the only other passengers on this train are apparently the worst band in the universe. And at dawn, the train is going to crash, and God and Satan are going to divide up these souls. But in the meantime, they're divvying up other souls in the form of three small stories, which are pulled from three unfinished or undistributable movies cut up and put together. The movies are Scream Your Head Off, Death Wish Club, and Cataclysm. And they comprise the three pieces that are kind of bookended by Satan, or by God and Satan and this horrible band. So the stories are all very disjointed and very strange. They were all written by Philip Yordan, who is the writer for this film, and all directed. I think actually only two of them were directed by John Carr, who is credited as the director on this film. So it was kind of cobbled together from bits and pieces of other movies, and it was very strange. I thought that there were some. I truth be told, I liked this movie. I thought it was a lot of fun and very weird, and I thought that it was very disjointed, but I thought that kind of aided it almost. I thought the gore was pretty gory and that the effects were pretty cool. I liked all the stop motion, especially in the third segment. Certainly liked rooting for Satan most of the time. And I never got sick of hearing that band play Everybody But You over and over and over again. Yeah. So while I was watching this, I could only wonder what you guys had to say about it. So I await with bated breath.
This may be one of the worst things I've ever seen. It's terrible. I didn't know what was happening for like the first 10 minutes. I have never heard anything about this movie. I didn't know it was an anthology. So I thought some weird thing happened where we had like this, I thought there was like three movies going on at once, like, cuz we had the band, and then we had God and the Devil, and then we had the eight beginnings of that one story where like 30 people are kidnapped.
Yes.
So many beginnings to that. So I thought that maybe this movie was written by somebody with like ADD and then directed by somebody with even more ADD. Like, I think for the first 10 or 15 minutes, there's not a scene that goes over like 15 seconds. Like, it's just insane. But it's awful. Everything about this movie is awful. And nothing in it makes sense. Like, we've got these stories. Like, one thing you have to do with anthologies is keep the stories simple, and then generally they'll work. You know, like Twilight Zone, you got
a guy who's afraid of planes, and there's a monster on the wing. That simple. Tales from the Dark Side, a guy has a mummy. Simple. But in this, you've got a guy, you know, like a guy who wants to get revenge because some guy took his porn star girlfriend, and then so he he joins like a suicide cult club and kidnaps the guy and makes him part of the club, and then when he gets away, he kidnaps him again, and it's just nothing, and it makes sense. It's just all over the place. But it's hilarious the way, like, he kidnaps him multiple times to bring him to the weird jigsaw-like traps that they have. And, like, they'll all be tied up to, like, an electrocution chair. And but he'll be pointing a gun at the guy while they're tied in. There's another
just
scene.
Just
in case.
That's just being cautious.
There's another scene where they're all, like, tied up in sleeping bags while, like, a wrecking ball hovers above them. He's got the gun on him the whole time. I don't know how he would have gotten out of that sleeping bag. But if he did, he would have got shot.
Well, exactly. That's why he had the gun on him.
And also, the guy was in, you know, the guy doing the kidnapping was in the suicide cult, too. So it was, he had just as good of odds of being killed as the new boyfriend. So I don't understand how he would have gotten his girlfriend back if it would have been him who got killed. His whole plan didn't make sense to me. Why even let him go in the first place if you're just going to bring him back a couple of days later for a new trap? Nothing made sense there. Then there was the part where they had the stop-motion bug that was, like, flying all over, and that was kind of cool.
That was awesome.
The camera work that they did to signify that the bug was flying. But the bug, which was stop-motion, stopped on a guy's hand. And then the hand was stop motion, despite the fact...
Yeah, it was like clay.
Yeah, despite the fact that the hand does not move the entire time.
Right. I thought that was cool.
There's no need for that. They could have just used a real hand. Oh, and one of the times they kidnapped the guy, a bunch of, like, Death Wish-looking thugs break into the guy's apartment, and they ensnare him with a net.
Classic.
You can't just hit him over the head with a lamp or something? Ensnaring him with a net. There's a scene in this movie where God says that he's better than the devil because he can laugh and cry at the same time.
And cry.
And that's that's exactly what I was doing during this movie.
That's crazy.
this movie is just horrible. I'm sad that I watched it.
I didn't feel as badly about this movie as you did. I agree, this movie is just disjointed as hell, and it makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, you start off, the first 5 minutes of the movie are this crazy 80s band dancing on this train, singing their hit song, Everybody But You. And you're like, what the fuck is this? I thought this was going to be a horror movie. And then, you get God and Satan playing chess, and that's ridiculous. You know, but the thing about this movie is I think watching these three little vignettes is way more enjoyable than it would have been watching these three movies in their entire form. I mean, I think these movies would probably be pretty unwatchable at an hour and a half apiece, but when you cobble them down to, like, the best 30 minutes of them and put them together, it does make for some enjoyable watches at times. I mean, yeah, granted, it is all over the place and it is really cheesy, but the special effects parts I thought were pretty amusing. There's a lot of good gore effects, people getting their heads exploded and demons and stop motion bugs and all this stuff to make this movie at least worth watching for fans of that kind of stuff. But you definitely have to go into it with a low expectations in terms of story and plot and stuff. I mean, this is definitely one to watch with a group of friends and, just make fun of and have a good time watching it and then just enjoy the craziness. I think it was funny that Bull from Night Court is in one but two of the stories
and
different characters. I mean, none of these stories were particularly that good. I mean, the one about the immortal Nazi Satanist guy was kind of retarded. I mean, they were all kind of retarded. And, you know, they were all interspliced with that band singing that song over and over again. So, it was terrible, but it was a fun kind of terrible for me, and I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, I couldn't understand the band playing that horrible song over and over. Like, I think maybe I'm going to get Creepshow, and then during the parts where, like, the Creepshow guy is explaining the stories, I'm just going to put the climactic dancing from Breakin' in those scenes instead. That's basically what this movie would be.
Right. Well, it's funny. I feel like they were trying to cobble this movie together, and they were like, all right, well, we'll have God and Satan playing chess together to kind of connect the two, or connect all the stories. Like, but we got to have something else. And somebody was like, well, my nephew's in this pop band. They only have one song, but...
But they're serious about it.
Yeah. Like, all right, well, we'll just throw them in. That'll pad it out. Yeah, I also liked how there's really awkward narration, too, over the movies to kind of, like, lead you in to the stuff that you had missed that they obviously clearly cut out. You know, like, and that's when Cindy decided she was going to take a trip to the dentist. Then it cuts to the dentist's office.
Yeah, that second story I don't even think had an ending. I think they just narrated the ending.
Right.
We're good here, yeah.
Which was fine by me. I wish they
had. Well, if you didn't hate this as much as Parker and you are in Columbus, Ohio, the Wexner Center is screening this in a rare 35mm print from New Zealand on March the 5th. And I wish I could go.
Yeah, I probably will go to that. Because this movie, I will be honest, it is a piece of shit. But if you're going to see this, seeing it in a theater with a bunch of people, I think that would be pretty fucking fun. So
that's going to rule.
Yeah.
I'm jealous that you are at least sort of able to do that. But
yeah, and I think by the end of the movie, the whole audience will be singing in unison, come on and dance with me, dance with me.
I think it'll be required.
Yeah, if not, I will lead the chorus of people and make it happen.
You'll have to go around and wake them all up individually before they sing, though, I'm sure.
They'll be on their edge of their seats waiting to find out what happens in this divine chess match.
Yeah. No, they won't. You find out, like, the first scene that the train's going to crash. So when crashes, who cares?
Yeah, but did you know it was going to be a toy train that crashed?
Yeah. And
suspicions
that they were in space. Actually, yeah, you didn't know that the whole time, too.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, they're in space.
Yeah, speaking of God and Satan in the credits of this movie, I don't know if you watched that.
I did see that.
But in the credits, God is played by himself, and Satan is played by Lucifer.
Yeah. Oh, really?
They got the real deal.
Trial on casting, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you like anthologies, if you like stop motion, if you like bugs, if you like big wrecking balls and sleeping bags, if you dislike Parker, you will love this movie.
And if you like curing your insomnia, you will also like this movie.
It's true. Yeah, I did want to mention one other thing. Let me find this note that I had. Fuck it. I'm done.
Why was Jimi Hendrix in the Death Club?
Yeah, that's a good one. That Death Club was weird. But the way Jimi Hendrix died was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
True. Yeah, that was a good death scene. Well, that pretty much wraps it up for Night Train to Terror. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to say goodnight to you.
All right, well, that just about wraps up episode number 47 of Junk Food Dinner. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. If you'd like to get in contact with us, please send us a message at jfdpodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on one of the social network sites like Facebook or Twitter or Blueberry. Also, if you'd like to get in contact with us, please leave us a message on our hotline at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Leave us a message about any of the shows that you've heard, or if you want to leave us a message for our 100th episode, talking about your favorite or least favorite moments from Junk Food Dinner over the past years, please do that. If you'd like the links to our Facebook and Twitter accounts, or links to find us on iTunes, you can go to our website, junkfooddinner.com. Hit the links to subscribe to us on iTunes, or you can find links to all of our past episodes, various pieces of nerd news, links to some of our friends, and all the ways to get in contact with Junk Food Dinner. Make sure you tune in next week. We're going to be looking at Invaders from Mars from 1986. Cutie Honey from 2004 and Psychos in Love from 1987. We will also have a special guest on that show. Mark, you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, our new pal Matt D from Forbidden Planet will be joining us on the show next week. He's bringing Psychos in Love on the show, so it's going to be a lot of fun. He was one who told me about Big Fat Scary Thursday, so I think it'll be a blast.
Excellent. So yeah, definitely make sure you tune in for that. And until next time, this is Kevin Moss, Mark Fredo, and Parker Bowman for Junk Food Dinner saying adios, everybody. We will see you next time.
Blah blah blah
blah blah blah blah blah blah
blah blah blah
blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah